The gospel lesson is from Luke's gospel. And it shows how Jesus used Sabbath. Once when he was in one of the cities, there was a man covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he bowed with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you choose, you can make me clean." Then Jesus stretched out his hand, touched him, and said, "I do choose. Be made clean." Immediately, the leprosy left him, and he ordered him to tell no one. "Go," he said, "and show yourself to the priest, as Moses commanded, and make an offering for your cleansing for a testimony to them." But now, more than ever, the word about Jesus spread abroad. Many crowds would gather to hear him and be cured of their diseases. Do you hear Luke kind of making that breathing in? Dang. And then this. But he would withdraw to deserted places and pray. Did y'all know that the 7 days of the week are named after pagan deities? Every time we say a name of the week, we're saying a little prayer to some ancient pagan thing. Sunday is the day of the Norse god Suna. Monday, the day of the moon god Mani. Tuesday is the day of the god of war, Tyr, the Germanic version of the Roman god Mars, where we get Mardi in French. Tuesday, the god of war. Wednesday is the god Odin's day, or in Latin, Mercury's day. Thursday belongs to Thor, or Zeus, or Jove. Friday is the day of Frigga. What a great name. I'm going to start using her. The wife of Odin, similar to the Roman goddess Venus. Saturday for the Titan Cronus, or Saturn. Interestingly, biblical Hebrew does not have a name for any of the days of the week, probably to avoid the pagan names that the Babylonians and later the Greeks and the Romans used. So Sunday is just Yom Rishon, the first day. Monday is Yom Sheni, the second day, and so on, until the seventh day. And it is named Shabbat, which means stop! It might be translated sometimes as rest, but I think we need a firmer translation today. Stop! Because the rest of our culture is saying, go! Our culture's use of time, our days of the week, have gotten completely manic, and we need to just stop. Just one day. Now, last week, we explored the painful question, whatever happened to time? We explored how our get-ahead, be a success, perpetually busy, always connected, overtime demanded, smartphone ruled, texted, emailed, tweeted, retail therapied 24/7 culture has robbed us of any time that is not owed to somebody else. Every day of the week is now dedicated to one pagan deity, Mammon, the ever-hungry god of commerce and acquisition. It's manic. It is damaging our connections with our own souls, with our families, with our neighbors, with our planet, with creation, and with God. And we have to ask ourselves, and we did last week a little bit, how to heal. The ancient rhythm of Sabbath says, work hard for 6 days. Make things. Create things. Work hard. But the ancient rhythm of Sabbath also cries, stop! To the manic pace of our postmodern world. Stop! Stop and breathe! Stop! And rest! Stop! And play! Just stop for one day. Be still and know that I am God. So this week, I want us to look at how the ancient practice of Sabbath can help us heal our connections to our own selves, to shape and to reshape our spirituality, to look at how a day of rest can reconnect us to our truest self, what the ancients called soul or psyche. Now, 24/7 postmodern life makes it almost impossible for everyone to take Sabbath or Saturday off, as in Jewish tradition, or Sunday off, as in Christian tradition. Now, many of us are of an age that we can remember when almost everything was closed on Sunday, a couple of years ago. Now, for good or ill, those days are gone. Our calling now is to find for ourselves a day apart, to turn our 24/7 existence into a 24/6 life that is a healthy rhythm for which God designed us. Now, the first step is, ironically, a lot of work. And that is finding, or more common, carving out a time for Sabbath. No one has 24 hours that are just going to show up with nothing on their to-do list. Hi! I've never had that happen. Jesus, after a hectic week of teaching and healing, we read in Luke, would go away to a quiet place. An isolated place to pray. A one-day rather than a 40-day wilderness experience. Tim Keller, a Presbyterian pastor in New York City, writes, "Rest, ironically, is an activity that must be prepared for and then pursued. Sabbath requires preparation." Some of us, especially those of us who are parents, especially those of us who are single parents, may need to carve out smaller chunks because you can't dynamite a large enough hole in your week. But carve out chunks of, say, 4 hours here and there to start. Helpful hint. Begin Sabbath with a ritual that isn't part of your regular week. Light a candle and say a brief prayer to separate this time from ordinary time. So that's the first step, finding, carving out a space. The second step is simply this. Figure out what for you is work, and then don't do it. In your bulletin, in the third column, there are some helpful hints there. How to decide what not to do. One hint that's not in the column that is pretty handy. I've been reading more and more people doing it. Make a box. Might have to be a big box for some of us, maybe a suitcase, for everything that will distract you on the Sabbath. And put it in there. Put in your smartphone, your iPad, your laptop, your to-do list, your calendar. Shut it and forget about it during the Sabbath. Don't worry, it will still be there when you get back to it. Now, the third step might be the hardest. What to do that makes Sabbath more than just a day of nothing? How do you make it holy? What makes it spiritual? How can Sabbath be used to help us bring ourselves to be in tune with God and thus heal our own relationship with ourselves? There's a book by Ronald Rollhauser called The Holy Longing, The Search for a Christian Spirituality. And in it, he speaks of how every one of us has a deep, deep yearning within us. There's a fire, a restlessness, a longing, what he calls a dis-ease, not disease, but a dis-ease, a disquiet that causes us to search for and long for something outside ourselves. And it can take any number of forms. Pleasure, peace, love, power. Freud called it Eros, and he and Jung, Carl Jung, were rightly nervous about its dangers and its capabilities. This energy pulsing and bubbling up through us has the power to do good or ill. It sends one person off on a ship to discover new lands. It calls another to go into the desert for 40 days to discover their divine nature. Another to strive for power over others by any means necessary. It causes others to meekly acquiesce to another's authority in order to feel like they belong or they are valued. This energy can bring life or death. It can bring love or hate. Our spirituality, put simply, is how we examine and channel that holy longing within us, to take that wild, untamed energy and ground it, contain it, focus it, so that we might discover who we are at our deepest level, our most authentic selves. I was trying to picture this as I was reading chunks of this guy's book, and I was thinking of the three states of matter, solid, liquid, and gas, and I was reminded by my aerospace engineering professor way, way, way back in the day, where he said that liquid, he said, is the most playful of the states. He said, solids just sit there and don't do anything, and gas is like, it goes off and it can't do a whole lot. It's just, boof. It's uncontained and wacky. Liquid is playful. Liquid can be held by any container, and it takes the shape of whatever container it is in, and yet it's always available for splashing and playing. It was a little simplistic, but we were freshmen at the time, so it was okay. I think a healthy spirituality is liquid. It's flexible, it's playful, it takes on the form of whatever contains it, yet it's always able to take on new forms, always refreshing and life-giving, where a solid is unyielding and stiff, and gas is chaotic and ephemeral. Liquid can be channeled, played in and upon. Perhaps that's why sailing appeals to me so much, because it brings wind, water, and wood, gas, solid, and liquid into a harmony. And with experience and discipline and formation, sailing can channel those three different states to yield motion and purpose and movement and direction and possibility and beauty. The author used the terms fire and glue, which I didn't particularly like. And he talked about some people have that manic, powerful energy, that fire within them, and no way to contain it. It's not grounded, and they flame out. He lifted up Janis Joplin and, I'll add, Johnny Rotten as examples of this. All fire, all flame, all energy and creativity without grounding, without a container. Neil Young wrote of Johnny Rotten, it's better to burn out than it is to rust. And indeed, both Janis and Joplin and a whole number of other amazing talents did that because there was no grounding, all fire. You've probably met some of the opposite as well. The prudish Puritan who is so cold and rigid and contained that the fire has gone out and they are fossilized. You find them in church especially. So our spirituality is about learning how to contain and channel that energy into ways that bring life, that bring love. Everyone is being spiritually formed all the time, whether you're conscious of it or not. The question is, how are we being shaped and by what? Now, there are big things in our lives that can lead to our formation, that we can remember. Events, key moments, key decisions, people coming into our lives, happenings that were life-giving or traumatic or something in between that pop into our lives that hit us and it's like, yeah, that helped me become the person I am, for better or for worse. Those events shape us, form us. But the small stuff shapes us too. Habits, how we spend our time, form us too, passively and actively. Those things that become automatic, that we don't think about, can be both life-giving and also that which sucks the life right out of us, sucks the fire from our bones. So here's the invitation. Sabbath, carving out some chunk of time is a space for us to be quiet enough to look at what the fire is within us. What is the energy that's bubbling up? What is its source? What is it focus, or how do we focus it so it might be utilized for that which is good, that might be utilized toward what is God's will for you and for creation, what Jesus called the kingdom of God. Sabbath can be a time to explore what animates us and how to make it holy. Regular Sabbath can provide a framework of time, of action, of rest, of reflection, of prayer that can allow God to enter into the quiet, to partner with you in a regular practice that focuses and disciplines your spirituality, channels the divine energy toward that which gives life and love rather than destruction and chaos. Now, even as I'm saying this, I'm realizing it sounds a little woo. So let me give you just a couple of examples that I'm aware of because it involves me and Barb. We have figured out, we hope, what is going to work for us as a day for Sabbath. It used to be Monday. Monday sounded good because we're recovering from Sunday, which is not a day of rest for pastors. And except that, I've got, you know, classes I teach on Monday, and that kind of makes it not Sabbath. So we worked out, how about Friday? And using the Jewish methodology of creating Sabbath, you start on Thursday night at sundown. We lit a candle. We invited the spirit of Shabbat, of Sabbath, to come be with us through dinner on Friday night. And it was kind of cool. And we got to reflect some. And as I started thinking about this sermon, we started reflecting some. Barb, being far more introspective than I, observed this. When she was thinking about what is that which energizes and animates me, she lifted up the lyric to the hymn, Finest Bread, the hymn, Here I Am, Lord. Finest bread I will provide till their hearts be satisfied. That speaks to her. That is what motivates her. That's why she teaches. That's why she cooks. That's why she gardens. Providing the finest thing she can to provide for people's bodies, hearts, and minds. That's what animates her as a teacher. That's what animates her as a mother, as a partner, as a human being. And so Sabbath for her meant some activities that give her energy that, according to Orthodox Sabbath rules, are work. She got in the garden, and she got her hands in the dirt, and probably her feet too. I don't know if you were barefoot or not. That's not a picture of Barb's feet. She went out into the woods digging up ramps. Ramps, is that a term for people? I didn't know that. I always think of like wheelchair things. But yeah, little beautiful wild onions that I grilled up for dinner. And oh my gosh, wonderful, wonderful. That might be considered work. Labor to go out into the woods and look for wild onions. I actually went looking for fiddleheads, but it is too early still. Finest bread I will provide till their hearts be satisfied. Barb's always looking out for the next thing, the next best thing that she can create and provide for another. Now, this is great. As long as it's grounded and has that fire to it in balance. But using our solid liquid gas idea, if that desire of hers was just a solid, unyielding, for her, it would yield a dark perfectionism that would never be satisfied with herself or anybody else. It would be rigid and stuck to results, and she would be an entirely less wonderful person than she is right now. But if it were purely energy, if it were purely atmosphere or air or gas, she would never stop. She would fry herself. She would be so focused on providing for others that she would never feed herself, and she would go, or more likely, implode. But as it is, when she... What's that? Sabbath gave her the opportunity to be able to look at that and channel it, seeing how it's a divine process that she's able to plug into. And it's beautiful when it's in balance. When I looked at what feeds me, I realized it is companioning people into adventure, to allow people to see new possibilities. As a teacher, as a pastor, there's nothing I love more than introducing people to Jesus as though it's for the first time, or maybe it is the first time, and watching the light bulbs go off, or exegeting on scripture and people going, oh, that's what that means. Cool. Or, hey, how about we try this, church? How about we do this fifth Sunday thing? It's weird. It'll probably fail, but let's give it a shot. Essex is out. It might seem sometimes like my ministry style is one stupid thing after another. Some work, some don't, and you are all brilliantly patient with me. Thank you. But if I weren't a pastor, I'd probably be leading bicycle tours, or I'd have a sailboat that I would take people out to go dope cruising on for insane amounts of money. I want to say, look, let me show you this swimming hole. Let me show you this diving cliff. Let me show you this place where the sunsets are like no other. As a dad, I've tried to share but not force my love of certain things to see if the light bulbs go off. Whether it's a love for reading or a love for cross-country skiing or for bicycling or for engineering. All of it simple, minimalistic, graceful magic carpets to new places, new possibilities, and new horizons. Now, as long as I'm balanced, it works really, really well. If I get solid, if I get rigid, I can get hypercritical and pessimistic about everybody around me. And if I get all gaseous, then I get manic and distracted even more than I am now. And I'll be of no use to anybody. Sabbath gave me a chance to examine that a little bit, name it, see it, give myself permission to be looking at what's coming my way and what are the possibilities, see what's on the horizon, and not beat myself up for that. But also learning that focusing it helps me, channeling it allows me to set a direction, a speed, and allows others to follow. I normally do a 7-page sermon. Today, I did a 6-page sermon because I want to give you a Sabbath rest of 1 page. So I'm going to give us a 3-minute silence, but it's not nothing. I invite you to a holy space, a holy time. And in the silence, giving yourself a chance to breathe, I want you to think about what is the fire in you? What is the energy? What is that which animates you? And think about how God calls you to channel it, how to focus it, how to use it, partnering with God toward God's will. I invite you to a 3-minute Sabbath. Take a breath in. Take another one. And another. And another. And another. And another. And another. Our lesson on Sabbath is breathe out our truest selves. Are formed in partnership with God. So make a space and find yourself. Amen.